are listening to Up to Me Radio, the best in inspirational talk radio. It's up to me.
Everyone, thank you for joining me for Breaking Barriers with host Jennifer D. Giles. I'm your host for a podcast delivering content that you won't hear anywhere else but right here on Breaking Barriers. And in keeping with Up to Me Radio's promise to listeners of all of our shows, the producers of Breaking Barriers curate content to inspire, uplift, and empower you to be better and do better. We bring storytelling and conversations that inspire us to break through barriers, those real and those that sometimes only reside within us, barriers that can keep us from moving into our purpose or living in our truth or making decisions that keep us in control of our lives. Breaking Barriers premiered about 3 weeks ago amid an unprecedented time in our country and indeed the world. Because the COVID-19 pandemic has changed our lives in new and sometimes tragic ways, we dedicated our premiere show to spending an hour talking with guest Althea DeBar Johnson, an estate planning attorney who shared critically important information with us all about what we should be thinking about and being prepared to do to take care of ourselves and our loved ones for whatever situation life may throw at us. The pandemic, which has taken nearly 60,000 Americans of all ages, all walks of life, and it is causing us to rethink and reshuffle priorities. Estate planning is not all about death. That's one thing that we talked about in our premiere show, and it's one thing that I want us to remember as we talk with our guests today. Estate planning is not all about death. Estate planning is also about life. The guest of our premiere show likes to say the estate planning process is about the business of living. As I promised you during that show, we are continuing that important conversation today with Tamara Stupart Wilson, a partner in the law firm of Althea DeBar Johnson, and she specializes in complex trust taxes, and wills as well. Our guest is going to, for us, demystify trust and calm any apprehension that we may have about that T word. We all know it. Some of us dread it. Yes, taxes. So you won't want to miss a moment of what she has to tell us. We will be right back. Stay with us.
There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Stay home when you are sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects with household cleaning spray. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
And we're back with Tamara Stupart Wilson, an attorney who helps clients with all types of trust matters. If you've ever wondered exactly what a trust is and whether you need one, Ms. Stupart Wilson has the answers for you. She is also a tax expert. As we know, the IRS has adjusted the filing due date, 2019 tax returns, to July 15th due to the pandemic. In the weeks leading up to that date, you may be wondering what you should do. You may have questions. I think our guest is going to be able to help you at least with some of those. She is a calm and authoritative legal expert in tax matters. And we could think of no better time to talk with legal experts about estate planning and taxes than the global health crisis we are experiencing and the uncertain times we are living in. Tamara Stupert Wilson is a partner in the law firm of Althea DeBar Johnson, PC, and a Georgia licensed attorney who started her career as a Georgia State law student attorney serving in the low income tax clinic and as an extern at the IRS Individual Tax Court Division. In addition, while obtaining her law degree, she clerked for a boutique estate planning law firm located in Dunwoody, Georgia. She has experience in preparing comprehensive estate plans, including wills, basic and complex trusts, all of which allow her to help each client develop an estate plan that is personalized to their specific needs. She also holds a master's in accountancy with a specialization in taxation. Tamara serves as a court-appointed attorney and a guardian ad litem for both Fulton County and DeKalb County probate courts in Georgia, and she specializes in guardianship, conservatorship, and probate administration advocacy. Tamara, welcome, and thank you for being here today to talk about these two very important matters, estate planning, trust, and taxes.
Thank you so much for having me. It's truly an honor to be here, Jennifer. And the first thing I wanted to share, because I know right now the hot topic is our taxes and the deadline and what we should be thinking about. So I'd like to just share a couple of components you might want to think about right now.
Sure.
So with the July 15th deadline approaching, first, I want you to understand that estimated payments have also been extended. Okay, and that is your obligation if you know that you will owe taxes, especially if you're a small business owner, to go ahead and make those payments. Typically, payments are due on April 15th, and July 15th would be the next payment date, but the IRS have allowed for those payments to be extended through the July 15th new deadline. So you have time. I think that will help a lot of small businesses so that they can at least prepare for that or have time to make safe income to provide for those payments. The other thing
that's great
to think about right now, yes, it's very great news. And I think that right now with COVID-19 and a lot of businesses having to shut down or operate on a limited basis, they're able to have more time to gather the funds if need be.
Again, great news, especially for all of us who are concerned about that. And I'm sorry I interrupted you.
That's okay. So the next thing is the unclaimed refund. So if you have not filed tax returns in the last few years, and there's a possibility that you can receive a refund, especially if there's a 3-year statute of limitations. So the last year right now would be the refund that you would have received for 2016. Go ahead and file that return because any unclaimed refunds, that extension also applies through the July 15th timeframe versus the April 15th timeframe.
Okay. That is great. I can hear the sighs of relief out there hearing that news because, as is normal, we're all kind of concerned about our taxes, and that brings a question to mind. As you were giving us that great news, I wonder if you might address a question for me. Say someone filed in 2019 or even 2018, and say that person owes. However, that person has been furloughed from work due to the pandemic. And in some cases, the job that they held a few weeks ago may no longer even exist. The bottom line is he or she cannot pay. Does a taxpayer have any options? And if so, what are those options? I mean, what should these people be doing, thinking about?
Absolutely. I think this is a growing concern. I've actually received a lot of clients in the last 2 weeks that's concerned about this exact same thing. What I would recommend is first, go ahead and file your tax return. You don't have to wait for the July 15th deadline. The sooner, the better, okay? Because if you are due to receive a refund this year versus in the past years where you owed, that can offset that liability, okay? The other thing is the July 15th extension also has allowed you more time to prepare for that. So there aren't any garnishments that's going to occur at this time, no levies, no attempt to collect the debt on the IRS part during this time. So if you are able to get your paperwork and your documents together, go ahead and see how much disposable income you may have and start to prepare or think about what a payment could be to the IRS in order to pay those back taxes. The other option is if you don't have any disposable income, then I think now is the time to articulate that to the IRS, and that can be in the form of an application for an installment agreement, or you can be put in a status called non-collectible, meaning that the IRS right now will not pursue the tax liability. Instead, they can, for maybe up to 12 months, they can put you in a non-collectible status where the liability is still there and it still collects interest, but there will not be any pursuit of tax collection. So you won't get the letters and the calls, and which typically causes us a lot of stress.
That's great information, because I think a lot of people may be concerned about that. And as a matter of fact, I've already spoken with a couple of people who are quite worried about that. They have been furloughed from work, and they've been furloughed for several weeks now, and they're not quite sure if they're going to be called back, and if they go back, if they're going to be able to keep the job for any length of time. So I do think that people are probably really, and rightfully so, worried. And so I'd like to pick up on a couple of things that you said that I think might be worth exploring a little more. When you talk about non-collectible, what exactly does that mean?
Okay. Non-collectible status means that you do owe the tax liability, but at this time there's some type of hardship, like you said, furloughed, or maybe you lost your job, or maybe there's a medical situation that you're having to deal with, and you're unable to pay the tax at this time. So what the IRS will do, they will just literally place your file to the side and not pursue that any action against you, meaning they will not pursue any liens, any garnishments, or any type of collection activity against you during the time you're in that status. Typically, they ask that in a year you provide an update to them as to your circumstances, and if your circumstances changes for the better, then maybe you can then negotiate an installment agreement that works. Otherwise, they just expect that at that time, after that status has ended, then they'll start collection action as well. It does not increase the statute of limitations. So if it's a situation where you're in disagreement with the liability, or if it's a situation where you're in doubt as to collectability, meaning that there's a long-term period where you will probably not be able to ever pay the tax, or if you feel that circumstances in your life has changed so much to the degree that they will probably never return to the same again, then there's a different set of action that I would recommend. And that would be more so in the avenue of an offer and compromise. In that arena, you're asking the IRS to probably settle the amount that you owe or renegotiate the amount that you owe, whether that is because doubt as to collectability, or that you're saying doubt as to the liability, like I don't really owe this, it was not done correctly. And then there's also some special circumstances, such as extreme hardship, that we could also look into as well, that could potentially relieve you of those taxes for good.
like a lot of people who are probably listening, I did not know that much of that was even possible. So this is why I think it is so important to have you on our show today to talk through some of these important tax matters that people may not know and may not even know how to go about finding out this kind of information. And this is a true story that I want to share with you and ask if you could respond, because I think you kind of touched on it. I have a family member who had 4 years of back taxes. So he went to and got them, got his taxes done, and he filed them. And he owes quite a bit of money. So mm-hmm. can he make the installment, when he tries to make the installment agreement with the IRS, does he tell them how much he can afford to pay, or does a person, or does the IRS tell a person, this is what you can, this is what you should pay us per month? How does that work?
Okay, so this is the question I get a lot, and I think that's why it's helpful to have someone who specializes in tax advocacy to assist you with this process. Tax advocacy is more of what a tax attorney does versus a CPA or a tax preparer. Their goal is typically just to prepare the taxes accurately, mm-hmm. okay? But that does not necessarily mean they're equipped or knowledgeable when it comes to advocacy, helping you or assisting you or representing you before the IRS. So when you're talking about an installment agreement, a lot of it is based on your ability to portray or tell a story to the IRS as to why you are only able to pay a certain amount. They only look at your assets, right? So they don't understand that, you know, you might have an illness that requires medical attention and certain medical bills. They don't understand that you might have dependents that aren't working in the home. They don't understand that some of the expenses that they would deem necessary, you also have some that needs to be considered as necessary, but there's a certain way to present those expenses. Typically, the IRS looks at your necessary expenses, and they subtract that by the income that you have, and then they come up with a number. Someone that mm-hmm. specializes in this area can help you understand, okay, some of the information that you shared with them is probably not enough, or maybe you can explain to the IRS on their behalf that, yeah, that might be the national standard, but here in my locale, the mortgage rates are a little bit higher. The taxes are a little bit higher. There are certain things that you haven't considered that's specific to my situation that needs to be considered a necessary expense so that it can lower the amount that the payment would actually be. So it is something that you articulate to the IRS, but having a little bit of assistance from someone who understands on the best way to articulate that information is extremely helpful.
Oh, I could certainly understand that, because just listening to your answer to that question, hearing you talk about assets, you know, it just raises a lot of questions that I think benefit from speaking with a tax advocate such as yourself, because we can talk for the next 2 hours and not cover everything that people really need to know. But what you have shared with us today is really eye-opening for me,
yes.
And I'm sure for a lot of people who are listening. So before we leave taxes,
I just want to add one more thing for your uncle. And the question that you asked is this something that your uncle has to pay, right? That's a question that we would want to evaluate. Maybe at this time in his life, maybe at one point making the payments was feasible, but maybe he's at a point now that he will never return to making the type of income that he made in the past. Maybe those opportunities mm-hmm. are not there, or maybe he's just older, and now that he's retired, potentially, he could never get there, and maybe an offer is probably more adequate for him at this time of his life. So just depending on where you are at any given time, it could change, and that doesn't necessarily mean that We're trying to avoid it. We're just trying to let the IRS know that our intent is to make them whole, as whole as possible. And whatever is equitable is probably what makes the best sense at that time.
That's great information. And it's great to hear you talk about circumstances too, because this person is, you know, he's up in age. He's in his late 80s, and he's trying to wait it out, if you will. But what I said to him is, I'm like, you can live another 10 years. So you know, it's no use in trying to wait this out because you think you're up in age. So I really seriously think that's excellent information. Excellent information. So before we leave the topic of taxes and move to trust, which I think is going to be just as important, I would like to ask you to talk just a little bit about what a tax attorney does. What do you do as a tax attorney?
Okay, so as a tax attorney, I pride myself in being a good listener. Sometimes I feel that tax preparers are so focused on getting the return done, they're not really listening. And sometimes when you're preparing a return, it's also understanding the goal. You know, is this family a family that's going to be expanding? Is this family one that's going to be preparing to purchase a home in the next year or so? Is this family one that's going to be going into retirement, and how do you prepare for that as well? And the other thing is having a voice for your client. I think a lot of people, which is valid, are very fearful of the IRS. I mean, I think it's very scary and can be very daunting receiving letters and correspondence stating that you owe some very high amounts and you just don't understand how you even got into that situation in the first place. So we like to be a voice for our clients. And we try to find the best way to remedy the situation so that all parties are happy. And that includes the IRS as well as the client. We try to find ways that allow for everyone to win if that exists. And just a real solution so that people can take that burden and that stress off their shoulders. So most of the time when we're working with clients, we try to get a sense of long-term what life will look like and if there is a way to remedy this in a way that is affordable and efficient for them and their family without making it very taxing on the person as well as the household.
Right. That's great information, too, because I do believe for a fact that there is a lot of fear. I mean, just those three letters strikes up fear in a lot of people, and as you said, rightfully so, just hearing IRS. So, again, this is great information, and I hope everyone out there is listening and taking a breath. As we listen to our attorney talk about all the different kinds of options and solutions that may be out there. So in the time that we have remaining, I think we are going to be talking about trust with you. And that is another area that can be kind of mysterious. What is a trust and do I need one? So I wanted to talk about that very question. I wanted to start there. What is a trust?
Okay. Yes, I'm happy to define that. But what I always like to do is define what a will is and then define a trust, because I think that people, the majority of people have heard of a will before, right? And have kind of a sense of what they think it can do. And so a will, just to clarify, it's a written document that's signed and witnessed, and it's considered a death document, meaning it's only effective upon death. And I want to make that clear because I get a lot of questions as to all these things that people want to happen in their wills, and I'm like, no, that's not the purpose of a will. A will makes one devise of a gift, and it's a complete devise at that point, okay? So nothing else can happen after that gift is completed. A trust, on the other hand, is also a legal document. It is signed and it's witnessed, but it can be effective during your lifetime. It can be effective during any period of disability and after death. Okay? And I think that's the biggest difference, that it does
that
not just have – exactly. It does not just become effective when you pass away. Because the trust is effective during your lifetime, you can change it, and that's why they have living trust as well as irrevocable trust.
So could we talk about that for just a moment, the difference between a living trust and an irrevocable trust?
Absolutely. So I like to describe it as a open door closet scenario, okay? So, you know, when you walk into your closet and you leave that door open, you have the ability to keep pulling things into that closet, right? You can make changes. You can remodel it, put in new clothes, new shoes. That's a living trust. That means that during life, if there's an asset that you've placed in that trust and you say, you know what, I'm a little bit older and I realize I needed that asset for my care, you can pull that asset right out. You can still utilize it. During life, you can have assistance with decision-making. If you become incapacitated or for a short-term or long-term basis, someone in that trust can make decisions for you, a trustee rather. And it's open to make changes throughout your life. And then once you pass away, it then the closet shuts. And now it becomes irrevocable, meaning you cannot pull those assets out later and change your mind. Once that door has shut, it remains shut for eternity.
Okay. Great information. Tamara, what you're giving us today is absolutely essential. It's something we don't talk about every day and information that we cannot obtain unless we have someone like you. I can't wait for us to continue talking about trust and why your firm tells clients estate planning is all about the business of living. We need to take 2 minutes, but before we do, Tamara, could you give us 3 quick takeaways on what people should do to prepare for tax filing day, or maybe 3 things they should do to get ready to, you know, go to an attorney like you and start a trust?
Yes. So 3 things that I would recommend is go ahead and get all your documentation together. If you have not received W-2s or if you're still awaiting 1099, reach out to those entities, ensure that they haven't gotten lost in the mail or that you can't go ahead and download it online somehow. Number 2, I would say that if you do IRS or anything like that, go ahead and start to prepare on how you will gather or be able to pay an installment agreement if that needs to happen, or start to consider if an offer makes sense for you. Number 3, start to take a look at all of your assets and ensure that you know where the titles are, where the deeds are, and come up with a net worth statement. We offer our clients with a packet if you need that, but come up with that statement so you can have an idea on what exactly you need to address and what you need to deal with or what you would like to deal with upon death or upon being incapacitated.
Great, great information. Tell us how we can connect with you. Is there a website for the law firm, a phone number, if someone wanted to reach out to you?
Yes, so our website is actually under construction, and it will be ready in the next couple of weeks. But right now our website address is www.abjpclaw.com. We can be reached at 404-584-5555, and my email address is twood@abjpclaw.com.
All right. Thank you. We're talking with attorney Tamara Stupert-Wilson. She has a lot more to share on estate planning, taxes, trust, wills, all those things that are very important to us. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Dad, I picked up your pills, made your lunch, and your laundry is done. When you care for a loved one, you take care of everything. But are you taking care of yourself? Find free care guides at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
And we're back with attorney Tamara Stupert-Wilson, and she is talking with us about taxes as that new filing date of July 15th gets closer every day. And she's talking also about estate planning and trust. We're inspired to have this conversation by the, unfortunately, by the COVID-19 pandemic and how thousands of lives that have been suddenly taken by the virus is leading all of us, many of us, to rethink our priorities and rethink decisions that we need to be making. So, Tamara, right before we stopped for a few minutes, you were about to tell us about the different types of trust. How do I know which one is right for me? Could we start there?
Sure. So first, I just want to give, in general, the benefits of a trust, and then I'll talk a little bit about some of our specific type of trust. So trusts have lifetime benefits. They provide for the distribution of your assets. If fully funded, you can avoid the probate process, and this is a very daunting process in itself. You have to be able to get appointed as the executor if there is a will or the administrator. You have to know and have understanding and knowledge of the laws, when certain things need to be filed, inventory, things that the average person would just have no knowledge of unless they've been through this process before. It provides for a successor upon death or incapacity. It allows for the management of your property, even if you are incapacitated. You don't have to worry about who's going to pay the mortgage or the property taxes on the real property. You can address appointing disability guardians for minor children. So if something were to happen to you while your children were minors, or if you have children with special needs issues, you can go ahead and get that, start planning for who would care for them, who would be a decision maker in their lives. It involves tax planning, and it permits you to revoke or amend your wishes during lifetime, depending on the type of trust that you have.
I heard you say something very important about – oh, I'm sorry. Please go ahead.
No. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I heard you say something really important about trust and children. And so if I do have children or if I have grandchildren and I want to make sure that they're taken care of, do you recommend that people consider a trust versus a will? Meaning, can you place in a will, if something happens to me, I would like, you know, Uncle Charlie to raise my child? Or is that part of a trust?
So, again, when we talk about a will, it's just something that's effective during death. And at death, you know, we can only hope that a will capture exactly what we want to happen. But once that transfer is completed, it's completed. So is there intent there? Absolutely. But doesn't necessarily mean that someone's going to follow it. That's the other issue. It doesn't necessarily mean that a court will absolutely follow through with the intent. Not necessarily. A trust can essentially make sure that that occurs, because what the trust does is the trust holds the property and manages the property and distributes the property exactly in the way that you decide. A will is just one effective transfer versus a trust is a legacy transfer. So these terms can go on for a lifetime or even years after your life is no longer.
Got it. That makes perfect sense. I want to talk about something now that I hear people say, and I'm in that club, and I've heard people say often, trusts are just for wealthy. Trusts are just for people who have a lot of money or a lot of assets or people who are rich. And I want to know, is that a myth or is that true?
Jennifer, that's absolutely a myth. And so just to piggyback off of that question, I think it goes into the circumstances and situation of every family and also the type of trust. There's a number of types of trusts that you could take advantage of. And particularly myself, and I love to use myself as an example, I have a blended family. And so in that, I want to ensure that my children's interests are protected, as well as any of my bonus children. I want to ensure that their interests are protected. And I'm sure the one thing that, as a parent, we always want to make sure that we've left something for our children so that they can be better off with their future because of all the hard work that we put in to ensure that their future was bright, right? And so a trust can ensure that. So I mentioned a little bit earlier about a special needs trust. A special needs trust thinks about all those things that, you know, you want to ensure that a child that's unable to speak for themselves or advocate for themselves has. You know, you don't know that anyone is going to care for your child the way that you care for your child. But in trust, you can go ahead and put that plan into action. You can also ensure in that trust that they still can qualify for governmental benefits that they may need, such as medical benefits that are very costly. Maybe they have to stay at a living assistant and need specialized care. You can ensure that they still can qualify for all those things, but also still benefit from whatever you leave for them upon death. And so that's one thing. You have trusts that are life insurance trusts. So I know a lot of, especially in our community, the African-American community, you know, one of the main ways that we're able to leave legacy for our children is through life insurance. And we don't want our children to get a hold of that life insurance and just totally blow it in a matter of months, which typically happens because a lot of times when you're not accustomed to that type of wealth, you don't really know how to manage it. You don't know what to do with it. Well, a trust can manage the money for you and ensure that it's used for things that is a priority to you, such as education, such as special life events that's going to occur in that child's life, maybe to start a business, maybe to purchase real property. That trust can ensure that you have something for them for generations to come versus it being gone all too quickly, which typically happens.
I can even, let's think about it this way. Even if I have a child that is special needs and that child is an adult, I could still include him or her or include benefits and arrangements for him or her in that trust. We're not talking about, when we say child, we're not necessarily talking about someone under the age of 18. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes. And it could be a child. It could be in a family member, a loved one, a friend. It could even be a pet. I'm actually drafting a pet trust right now. You know, pets are typically a part of the family. And you can make sure you make provisions for that pet to ensure someone that will love them and care for them and give them all of the quality of life that you would have given that pet of yours.
So when I come to your office, if I'm someone that's I've made a decision, this is something I'm interested in, I think this is right for me, when I arrive to your office, what do I need to have done or thought about or bring with me when I sit down in that chair to talk with you?
So typically when someone reaches out to us for estate planning, and that's what we call it, when we're talking about wills and trusts and power of attorneys and advanced health care directives, that's called estate planning, okay? And then when you incorporate business, it's called business succession planning, but it's all within that arena. And what we typically do is we send you a questionnaire. That questionnaire asks questions about your assets. It asks questions about your net worth. It wants you to start thinking about who would you want the decision maker to be? Who do you trust when it comes to finances? If at some point in time you're unable to make decisions about your finances, who would you feel comfortable that would make good decisions with your money?
Mm-hmm.
If it comes to a point that you're in a hospital, right now we're in the middle of this pandemic, and you're in the hospital, and a lot of times you can't even be in the hospital with anyone. You can't even have a family member with you while you're there and you're alone. Who could be the decision maker? Who would you trust to be able to talk to a doctor and have an educated conversation about what's going on and make the best decision about your life and how to move forward? We would want to know that information. We would also want to know what bank accounts thought about beneficiaries. Have you updated your beneficiary designation, and when's the last time you've done that, or do you need assistance with thinking that through? Are there some tax implications that we should talk about? And so that packet kind of addresses a lot of those questions so that when you come in, you've already thought about it, and we can kind of try to figure out what's the best scenario or plan for you.
That's important information because, often when we arrive at an attorney's office, sometimes we arrive empty-handed, meaning that we're not sure what we should have brought or what we should have thought about or what decisions we should have made before we get there. So having that information, I think, will help an attorney to help us is
exactly.
What the way I'd like to think about that.
Exactly.
I also want to please go ahead.
And we understand that this is a business of living, so this is not an overnight thing. A lot of times you'll come to our office and you still won't be 50% there, and that's okay. We expect that. You are making life decisions. You are talking about death. You are talking about your mortality. This is not an easy thing to do, but what we like to do is just hold your hand through it and make sure that you have all the information and the things that you need to think about so that we can come up with the best answer together.
Great. I heard you say something that I want to explore just a little more. You mentioned the term business succession. Could you talk a little bit about what that is and why people who own a business or who may be married to someone who has a business, why that's important to think about right now?
Absolutely, especially in these times, right, Jennifer?
Yes, especially now.
So because we also practice in the area of guardianship and conservatorship, we see a lot of this happening. A lot of times, so 65% of growing businesses right now are small businesses. And that includes a lot of sole proprietors, meaning you are the only person in that business, running that business.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no one else standing in your shoes once you're no longer able to practice in that business, right? And so what happens is you might have articles of incorporation or bylaws, but they do not specify what happens if you're incapacitated. They don't specify what happens upon death. And then you have bank accounts, family members like a spouse or a loved one who needs to make decisions for you are unable to access those accounts. They're unable to keep the business going. They're unable to pay the bills that need to continue to be paid because no one has access to that. Or let's say you're preparing for retirement. You haven't even thought about what's the next phase of the business. If you're the only attorney in the office, if you're the only person knowledgeable about what's happening with the business, who takes over? What is the business worth? How do you value the business? Would you want your children to be on the board to continue to have a voice in your legacy or not? You know, these are so many things that we need to think about because we have so many people, especially in the African-American community, that are business owners that are doing amazing things. But once they're gone, there's no one to keep that business going or to share that legacy. So that's exactly what business succession planning is. It's ensuring that that business has a legacy, whatever that may look like, whether you're selling it or whether you're keeping it going, whether you're rebranding it, whether you're bringing in younger people to help keep that dream going. But it's thinking about that and having something in place so that the business can continue to survive when something traumatic happens.
That is absolutely critical information. And you're right. So many people own businesses, especially here in Atlanta. We have, you know, Black people who own businesses, and their businesses are doing amazing things. They're making money. They're contributing back to the community. But sometimes we don't always think about what's next, and we don't always want to think about how quickly things can change. If something were to happen to me tomorrow, what happens to my business? What happens to my family, my customers? So I really am so happy that we had a couple of minutes to touch on that and to talk about business succession and why it's critical that we think about it, and more importantly, that we have a plan for it.
Absolutely. Here in Atlanta, there's a growing number. My understanding is African American women are some of the highest growing population of new business owners. And so when you hear that, these are women who are probably stepping outside of their boundaries, right? Who are doing things that are unprecedented. And we don't want that to just be wasted. We don't want it to just go away when that person is no longer able to do it. We want to make sure that families understand that we have to plan to keep this dream going and to ensure that legacy is protected.
Great. That is so important. And I think, if you own a business, or if you're thinking about owning a business, or if you are a partner in a business, I think this is absolutely something that must be part of your planning for life and for what comes next.
That's right.
We often have, if we have time, and we do, today, I'd like to ask someone in our listenership to send in a question, and we have one. We have a couple today, actually, and if we could start with the first one. I have a question for you that someone asked me to pose to you and see if we could kind of talk through it. Here we go. So she says, my husband and I are in our 50s. He has children from his first marriage who are adults. We have no children together. We do have one grandchild, and that's a grandchild that they share, obviously, but it is not her biological grandchild, but she considers the grandchild to be hers. We've never considered a trust, but the pandemic is causing us to rethink a lot of these decisions. What should we consider if we're going to come in and talk to an attorney?
Yes. So I think that this is the wonderful blended family question. And I think that, so I get this question a lot more and more, as the divorce rate goes up, you get a lot of blended families, which is a beautiful thing. But I think the biggest thing there is that the parents have to have an honest conversation of what their goals are. I think the hardest part sometimes, you don't want someone to feel slighted, or you don't want someone to feel that you don't love one child more than the other, but you just have to have honest conversations. I think you need to talk about assets that were there prior to the marriage so that, you understand what the goals were for that. So if I purchased my home and my prior marriage or my first marriage before getting remarried, and the goal was to leave that house to my then existing children at that time, and I still want to do so, I think that's just an honest conversation, and there's nothing wrong with that. To talk about the assets in totality to ensure that everyone is being treated, if not fairly, but in accordance with what you all desire. I think that you start to talk about who are going to be the decision makers, such as the guardian, especially if you're talking about minor children or grandchildren, right, that may differ from one set of children to the other children. Maybe there's a father on this end, but maybe there's not a father for the other children. Maybe he's predeceased, but maybe there's a grandmother that's very, really involved in their lives that you would want to continue to be a part of their lives. And so that needs to be incorporated into the estate planning. I think that you really need to think about medical decision makers. Some people prefer for it to be their elder children, and to have them still play a role in that capacity. And you can have more than one decision maker. It doesn't just have to be yourself. So maybe a spouse coupled with an older child is a decision maker for medical decisions. And maybe it is a trust that can ensure that long term the grandchildren and future grandchildren can also benefit from these assets as a whole, so that everybody has a share and everybody has a pot that they can all benefit from.
That makes so much sense. And one thing that I just keep hearing over and over again as we've talked today is make no assumptions.
That's right.
No assumptions. And I think that we're all guilty of that at times. But especially when we're talking about family and we're talking about matters of benefit and who is going to, what we're going to leave to the people in our lives, and if we, you know, if and when we go. And I think a lot of us sometimes get into trouble because we're assuming that because I'm the spouse or because I'm the daughter or because I'm the son, that this is going to happen. And we touched on this a little, and I'd like to explore it more now, talking about having these difficult conversations and talking about trust. And I don't mean the kind of trust we've been talking about here today. I mean the kind of trust that sometimes those of us in the Black community have difficulty doing, whether it's with a physician or whether it's with an attorney or with other people who we need. And I wonder if we could talk about how we get to the other side of that. How do you start to build a relationship with an attorney or an accountant or someone that we really need, but we're having difficulty getting over to the other side of that barrier of trust?
Yeah. So, you know, that's a big issue, particularly in our community, where we see that, especially, you know, our older generations or our parents and our grandparents, you know, they're very private people. You know, they're very prideful.
Yes.
You know, they did the best that they could with what they had. And, you know, to say that I don't have something or I don't have an estate or I don't have a legacy was so hard for them. You know, it was hard. And I think it was a lack of understanding. They didn't understand that they did have a lot to offer, but they kind of took that in them within themselves and processed it and decided that not sharing was probably the better way to feel better about it. But I think the start of it is just talking. We need to talk to our families. We need to talk to our children. We need to talk to our parents. We need to have open, candid conversations about what's there, because you can't protect something that you don't know you need to protect. And I think that's one of the biggest issues. That's why we're losing a lot of property and some of our historical areas. That's why we're not preserving things, because you have these generations coming up that have no idea of what preservation means, you know? And so we're losing a lot of things for that reason. I think the beginning of trust is, you know, interview your attorney. You know, talk to your attorney. Ask them questions. Ask them concerns that you have, things that bother you, that scare you. You know, before you even decide to engage with that attorney, talk to them. See if they have experiences that resonate with you. You know, like the blended family. You know, I'm very candid with my clients about my own experiences, that I've been divorced, that we have children from both sides, that I have older parents that, you know, come from another country, that were very prideful about the things that they worked hard for over time. You know, share that experience. And most of the time, attorneys that are transparent, you can kind of see if that is someone that you can connect with and have a good fit or good relationship with, to be able to have these difficult conversations. The other thing that I recommend is that you research your attorney. Google that attorney and look them up and see if you see any bad reviews about them. Go on social media platforms. I mean, there's so much information out there nowadays. You can find out about an attorney. You know, talk to maybe a prior client. You know, get a referral from someone. Don't not do something. Just try to find a better way to feel comfortable, Because at the end of the day, the work still has to get done. And if you fail to plan, then you plan to fail. And we rather that you have a plan for your plan.
Quite right. Yes, that is absolutely true. If you don't plan and you plan to fail, and I also think what I'm hearing you say is not making a decision is a decision, and there's going to be consequences in you know, not making having control of the decisions when you can.
Exactly.
Because again, if you don't make a decision, you really have made a decision. You've just made
That's
a decision
it.
Not to take any action. And as I hear you say also, at the end of the day, it's the work still has to be done. Decisions still have to be made. And
exactly.
not having the conversation doesn't take away the realism that we're all facing. And that is life happens. Life is happening every day, and we want to make sure that we are, you know, in control of it to the degree that we can. We can't control everything in our lives, but there are mm-hmm. things that we can control. And I think if no one that has been listening to these two shows that we've done has heard anything, I hope they've heard this. Break through those barriers and make the decisions while you have control of your life and of your decision-making faculties. We're seeing so often now with the cases that we're hearing about during the pandemic that people will go into the hospital and, you know, a couple of days later they don't have a voice. They can't speak anymore. So while we have these opportunities, and it doesn't necessarily have to be a pandemic, while we have these opportunities, we need to take control of our decisions and our lives and of what we want to happen, whether we are here or when we're gone. And I think these conversations have been very important in getting us a little closer to that. If we could take just one more, we have just a few minutes, and I'd like to just share one more question with you, Attorney, if that is okay with you.
Absolutely.
Okay, one more. I'm single, in my 30s, and financially sound. Can I set up a trust for me and draw from it while I am living? And I think I heard you say earlier, yes, that is possible.
Absolutely, yes. So that typically, I would say the number one tool that we commonly draft is something called a living trust, and that's typically for people that want to go ahead and make provisions for a lot of these things that will happen. Sometimes you're single and you're young in your 30s, you may not have any children, or you may be older, it doesn't really matter, but this is a tool that you can take advantage of to accomplish all of these things we talked about as far as legacy planning, if you're incapacitated, to have decision makers available, and even potentially plan for upcoming marriage or something like that and have a spouse at some
mm-hmm.
point, and you can have all of your assets there. And if you need those assets, you can draw from them. But another trust that I would also like to just mention that correlates with that scenario is a asset protection trust. You know, we have a lot of young people that are very successful. You have doctors that have their own practices, you know, attorneys with their firms, or people that are starting these amazing businesses, these stores, these restaurants, and you want to make sure that you protect it. You know, especially in areas where you're constantly there's a risk of being sued, right? Especially doctors with malpractice and things of that nature. You can also put it in a trust to protect that asset. You don't necessarily have to put everything in a trust, but you can put those things that you work so hard for. In anticipation of something that could go wrong later on down the line.
Great. That is, again, excellent information. This has been an exemplary conversation. Believe it or not, an hour has gone by. We're out of time. And I just want to say that you've been just a great source of information for me and for everyone who is listening. We have been having a critically important conversation about taxes and estate planning with attorney Tamara Stupert Wilson. And I'm wondering if you will come back again and talk with us more about all of these areas, taxes, trust, building trust with an attorney.
Absolutely. I would love to come back. And it's something that's very passionate to me, Jennifer, is just ensuring that all people have access to this information. And particularly in our community, you know, access to this type of information is very scarce. It's knowing, making sure that you're going to the right people and getting the right information. We call inaccurate information a street committee because, you know, you hear so-and-so said or my neighbor told me instead of getting the right information. So I love to be available to answer all those questions and dispel the myths that are out there and ensure that people have accurate information so they can make accurate and proper planning.
Excellent. Thank you. That's all the time we have today. And I want to just, just want to say if you're enjoying the conversation, and I hope you are, please subscribe to the show at www.uptomeradio.com. We also have free giveaways, contests, show information, announcements, all kinds of great things. So please visit our site. Our podcast can be heard from the Up to Me website or any of your favorite free podcast apps such as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and TuneIn. And for a complete listing of all of our shows, again, please go to www.uptomeradio.com. Do stay connected and like us. Follow us on Facebook at Up to Me Radio, Instagram at Up to Me Radio, and on Twitter at Up to Me Radio. Join us for another Breaking Barriers, where storytelling is a journey of sharing, discovery, and connecting. I'm Jennifer Giles. Stay connected to us through Up to Me Radio.